The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network.
Another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles.
Yay, we're back!
I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G.
Yay!
And I'm joined tonight by the man behind the sound effects, at Agent_70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody? We're back!
And we also have at RyderCat on Twitter.
Yes, you could be even on down the road or watching the Game Wars, but you're here with us. I appreciate it.
That's right.
And not with us tonight, but hopefully recovering, is at @PCN_Dirt on Twitter.
Feel better, Dirt.
Make sure to go to his website, popculturenetwork.com. And while you're going to websites, also go to our website, theclicknation.com. You can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and Comic Book Reviews. Follow the Twitter account, @CBCron. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/theclicknation. As to your circles on Google+, just search for The Click Nation. Or actually, we have a URL, google.com/+TheClickNation. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and youtube.com/TheClickNation. We are a part of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. Go to cspn.us. And shout-outs to Classic for creating a specific RSS feed for the Comic Book Chronicles podcast. I'll have to dig that up so I can reshare that on future episodes.
Woo! Yeah!
We record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And use the hashtags Comic Book Chronicles or CBCron on your favorite social media websites. So, after taking last week off to celebrate Thanksgiving, enjoy time with family and friends, we're back. Lots to catch up on as far as news goes. So, this may be a quick round of trying to at least hit the big moments from the past 2 weeks. I guess, well, is it set up where it's last week and then we get the next week's writing?
As far as the books, yeah.
The reviews. Right. I mean, the news, I mean.
Oh, no, it's just straight through from the last couple of weeks.
Cool. So
it's in some sort of order.
Let's see. Wonder Woman cast was announced. A new photo released of Gal Gadot. We'll get more into Wonder Woman a little minute or so, I'm sure.
Gadot. Gal Gadot.
The CW's Legends of Tomorrow gets a premiere date, January 21st, 2016, Thursday night, I believe. Jessica Jones, which I haven't finished yet.
Oh!
Neither have I.
No! So. I think this is going to deserve a Treasury edition.
Yes, Classic's already made it known he wants to be a part of whatever we have planned.
That's what's up.
That's cool, that's cool. So we should definitely work out a Treasury edition just to do some... We may want to do like a mid-season recap of some of the shows that we watch too. Because there is some stuff going on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this week.
Yeah.
We're coming up to the fall or mid-season breaks for some of our favorite shows.
You got it.
Jessica Jones' second season may be delayed by the Defenders. Luke Cage casts Sonya Braga as Soledad Temple.
Let me tell you guys something. In New York right now, around my office, they have signs up, you know, for no parking towaways. And the code name for the production is called Tiara. And I'm like, what the hell could that be? Wonder Woman? So I Google it. It's Luke Cage. They're filming right now.
Nice. Yeah, I didn't put it in the lineup, but there's some pics of Mike Coulter and Rosario Dawson on the street, and even with the girl who plays Misty Knight, there's a couple of shots. So
nice.
That's going to be great.
So I was pretty jazzed to see that Luke Cage was also filming right around in Lower Manhattan, so that was pretty cool.
So if you happen to sneak on the set and happen to get a shot.
Oh, absolutely. You kidding me?
Let's see. It's been a busy 2 weeks for the Jimmy Kimmel Live show. Last week, they debuted the first official trailer for Captain America Civil War.
Which was insanely awesome. Which blew up Twitter.
I missed it that night. I did see, I guess, earlier that, was it Tuesday night? And then, or whatever night it was, or Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Whichever day it was that I saw earlier in the day that it was announced that it was going to be debuted on Jimmy Kimmel Live. And since I was out of town in an entirely different time zone and state, I was like, yep, I'll catch this in the morning.
People were still talking about it in the morning,
yeah,
too.
So. I woke up early just because of other reasons. And, you know, I was just kind of like, you know, scrolling around my phone. I think I saw someone mention it. Then my eyes got big, like, oh, yeah, there's a trailer. So then I watched over and over again.
Yeah, let me tell you, good luck trying to get to sleep that night. You kidding me?
Well, that was me last night,
crazy.
Which we'll get to again later on.
Yeah. All right.
But I guess our thoughts on the trailer?
I mean, overwhelmingly positive.
Yes.
Absolutely, because there was obviously shortly after there was a bunch of GIFs made out of various scenes that were shown, one of them being T'Challa kicking Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
So that got a lot of play. So it was it was worth a couple of views, like you said. So
there's
a lot of
squad goals.
Oh yeah, even when that one the
group running GIF
of them running, yeah.
I do like, and I thought of this after watching it a couple times, and I saw, you know, a couple people mention it online, but it is good that it does look like, you know, it does look like a Captain America 3 movie, not just Avengers 2.5.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The focus is on Cap, even though there's a bunch of guest stars to be seen. Well,
and I kind of like the way they're going with this, look like they're going with how things are going to go off. Because as we know about Secret Wars, how it's supposed to lay down, we're kind of wondering, well, how are they going to do this? And that trailer kind of potentially laid out some of it, and including one story that's probably about to come up, I guess, if you plan on doing it. But
So you can read the next story. You can read the Superhero Registration Act from Captain America Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
And a bot set for Phase 2, is it?
Yeah.
The Sokovia Accords.
Right. It's a really simple one-page thing, but it really does illustrate what the basis of the disagreement is.
So y'all have read it?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it really wasn't that much to watch. I mean, once you see the trailer, I mean, which is a side note of that, it was like, huh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I need to read it then.
Yeah, it's a quick read.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's real quick, so.
Okay.
It's not like that big legal document that they drop in front of Cap, you know? In the trailer, it's not that.
Yeah, okay.
Those are just the exhibits.
Yeah, I'm about saying, especially with something that's going to be in a really good, have real big contention against it, probably doesn't really need to be that big.
Right.
The Fantastic Four sequel was pulled from the Fox schedule.
Suck it, Fox.
Doctor Strange starts production, and the main cast was confirmed. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 director debunks Star-Lord father rumor. So James Gunn, I guess, was it Heroic Hollywood, the rumor site, had a post about who they believe they found out to be Peter Quill's father. James Gunn came out and said, this is the only time I'm going to come out and talk about rumors, but no, it is not this person.
All right.
So we shall see. Mm. Honestly, I don't care because, well, for one, I don't. I'll enjoy the movie either way. And
especially
two,
Gunn is still doing it, you know?
And two, give it a year either before or after the movie comes out, before the comics catch up and make that person his father as well.
Well, see, that's probably where I'm having the slight issue with it. Like, again, I'm not going to care either way because of the movie, but yeah, if they do go back and change the comic, I'm like, well, that's been, I mean, I get it, because that part of the story was kind of dealt with in ways, but.
And I know some people online were like, they don't change everything, you know, to match the movies. I'm like, that's true, but they change a lot.
Yeah, really.
They change the important stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, also in Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch aren't mutants anymore.
Right. That was pretty big.
Yeah. Just as Star-Lord's father. Mm-hmm. Just think of the stories they can come out. They can do like a whole year of stories in Guardians of the Galaxy off of that.
Agreed.
Skip some of this. There may be a Supergirl Flash crossover after all.
Really?
Executives for CBS Supergirl have said that they'll never cross the DC heroing over with CW shows, but according to another rumor site, Bleeding Cool, they might be changing their minds. The site reported that there are rumors brewing that should Supergirl be picked up for the remainder of a full season, the back 9 episodes, we could see a crossover.
Okay.
Yeah, and on that, they did order 7 other episodes after that, so there it's not a full season, but it's close enough. I mean, 20 at this point is kind of, you might as well say it's a full season, so.
So Jimmy Kimmel last night had Ben Affleck on to debut the new second trailer for Batman v Superman: Dawn of Justice, which broke the internet again. So I did watch that one live, and then it proceeded to keep me up another hour after the fact.
Trying to dissect it.
Not even so much dissect it.
Tweeting and reactions. I was online with a friend, and like some random person started tweeting at us, and I'm like, "Where are you? Who are you?" But it was interesting to kind of hear other people's takes on this trailer, because there were definitely a number of things that you could definitely taken a negative light, you know, much, much more than the Civil War trailer, because we're dealing with characters that are mostly established, and we understand these characters the way these actors portray them. When it comes to the Dawn of Justice stuff, we're still not 100% sure how we're going to react to Affleck's Batman, and we don't hear, spoiler alert, if anyone on Earth hasn't yet seen this trailer, we don't hear what Gal Gadot sounds like as Wonder Woman. So there's still a couple things left out there, but what we do know is that there's a lot of people who are uncomfortable with how Lex Luthor sounds. I'm one of them.
Me too. And Dirt apparently put a note in the doc saying pretty much the same thing.
So, you know, it was kind of...
Well, I don't know if it was because of Lord, he just said that Lex. That's my ugh, that Lex. So I don't know if it was the whole thing or just...
Yeah.
He sounded more like a Riddler.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I was going to say? He's a cross... You know what's funny is that there's a tinge of Joker in there, too.
Yeah.
There was a tinge of Joker in there. I definitely hear Riddler, but there's a tinge of Joker in there, too. And I found that kind of disturbing, because Luthor is his own kind of megalomaniacal self. You know, he's probably the closest thing you get in DC to a Doctor Doom, you know?
Right. And usually more cool and calm sounding also. Or at least more, I don't want to say monotone, but I mean, and I guess if you're going by, say, Justice League, or heck, you could even throw in Superman 1, but even
Yeah, whatchamacallit. The voice actor who does it for
Clancy Brown.
Yeah, they could have used him. Although they've already wasted him as a general on the Flash.
Yeah, he's on Flash, so yeah. Which still would have worked, I would imagine.
Yeah, so. You know, there's a certain gravitas to Luthor that's missing here, so.
Yeah.
I did like the lighter tone in certain places. You know, they did show that the characters can, you know, throw some quips out.
Mm. Actually, you know, the one part that I actually did like that initially I didn't, when Clark and Bruce kind of was face to face, and then there was that little piano note that came in right before they started talking, or when the other guy was like, was saying, "Hey, this is Bruce Wayne," and there was a little piano note came in, and then they started talking. I actually liked that little tete-a-tete between them two.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, huh, all right, the tension's already there. And they don't even know each other yet, or whatever. So that part was kind of cool.
Saw some other scenes. Saw what everyone is speculating are parademons.
Right.
See, I didn't see that, because maybe I must have missed it.
The Sandy scene where Batman's, like, fighting some guy that's got him from, like, behind, and all those creatures are flying in the air.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I totally missed that. I remember that scene. But,
it's quite possible. It's quite possible.
And then we get to the ending.
Wait, there's two big reveals at the end.
Yeah.
Right? One of them is obviously someone we just mentioned, which is Wonder Woman, right?
Yeah.
She jumps in playing Captain America, and I'm like, just use the bracelets, lady. But...
Pretty sure the bracelets won the blot.
I know, but like growing up a comic book fan, you know, those bracelets
blocked. No, the bracelets just stopped everything.
You know? Like, she'd go like this, and everything would just be blocked. So nowadays, it's a little bit more realistic. Now she's got to play like Captain America, you know?
Yeah.
But the other thing that was revealed is a possible second villain, and that is Doomsday, who I initially thought was Bizarro. You know, because of the heat vision blast.
Some people mentioned that.
Yeah. The heat vision blast that threw everybody off, and I needed a second look and a couple of freeze frames to really see the bony protrusions. And once I saw that, that's what cinched that it was Doomsday. Or at least
I'm still going with my Lord of the Rings tie-in. You're not going to stop me from that, because...
You think they're orcs?
Yeah.
They're orcsies.
Pretty much. So I'm going with that, unless you throw some more armor on them later on, which I don't think they'll have time to, well, I don't think it'll be necessary to do. I'm sure it is what it is.
It'd be funny if Wonder Woman's blade glowed blue.
I know, right?
So it's like there's going to be more mass destruction when our three heroes have to take on Doomsday.
Yeah.
Now I got to watch Man of Steel.
It's not as bad as a lot of people make it out to be, but
yeah, no,
don't count on coming out of it with like a good feeling. That's what that's pretty much my
I figured like this. My bar for this kind of stuff usually generates kind of low,
mm-hmm.
and having the buzz about it already spoiled for, well, not, I mean, however thrown out there is kind of toting it down. I mean, just kind of keeping it metered, so I'm not going to be too pressed about it one way or the other.
Right,
it's probably better than people think it is, and it's just a rebel. But anyway, let us move on.
All right.
Samurai Jack creator returns to Cartoon Network to continue the Samurai's tale.
I don't know the fuck anything.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's gonna be weird without Mako.
Yeah, the voice actor.
Yeah, or Mako. Sorry, I don't know if it was.
He passed away in 2006, which I did not know.
Yeah, he was doing Avatar at the time.
Oh,
I remember that.
Arrow scored its highest rating since 2014's crossover during this week's crossover with The Flash.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Did we all watch the crossover?
Nay.
It was pretty epic.
Yeah. Nice.
It was like the thing I got to do last. Matter of fact, I had just watched this morning. I'm not going to spoil anything, even though.
You can spoil it because I'm so unfamiliar with what's going on. Spoiling it's not going to make a difference. I'm more in the market to kind of see how it's executed.
Yeah. Well, let's put it this way. There's more Legends of Tomorrow tie-in very closely we have a long, long, long running villain. That's the big bad of it.
Right, Vandal Savage.
Yeah. So that's, if you know that much, you pretty much, they tied him to a couple of characters of the Legends of Tomorrow show.
Okay.
Yeah. And just like last year's crossover, it seemed like to me the Flash one was a little bit better. The Flash part was a little bit better than the Arrow part, and I don't know why, because it's the same people doing both shows, pretty much.
Okay.
I did see, was it Andrew Kreisberg, or one of the producers of the shows, Tuesday night, he did mention how they want to flip the both episodes, so like, the Flash comes on Tuesday, they want to have the Flash be more of an Arrow episode, and the Arrow more of a Flash episode.
Right, to which I actually shout out to William Bruce West, because I think he mentioned that when I was live tweeting him this morning, and I felt like I've seen that with the last crossover too, which makes sense, because you blend them both together, you don't want them to be too far different from each other.
Yeah. And I guess it might help bring in more viewers, where if take an episode of The Flash and make it more of an Arrow episode, so people that watch The Flash might see all the Arrow stuff and say, I need to start watching Arrow, and vice versa.
Right. I was making a comment this morning while I was watching it, and I was like, you know what? I think I said something like, I totally forgot it was an Arrow episode until I heard the music cue near the end of it. So, and the only thing that was kind of missing, which this was probably not a big deal to anybody. Well, there was a couple of things I was probably missing. Iris didn't show up that I remember seeing.
For none of the episodes?
Yeah, for neither one. So I figured, maybe there was a reason for that. And then there was a key thing that I was waiting for to see. Like, they were almost there that I did not see. They didn't show. I'm going to go ahead and spoil this one. The Shiro's mace. That's the only thing I didn't see.
Did we?
No, we didn't. So I was like, oh man, I figured they were going to show that. Or at least show it. Cause
I was going to say, both Hawk people, though, have a mace. And
to which they did show, yeah, because, and Hawkman did have one.
Okay.
But they just didn't give her one then, I guess, maybe for Legends of Tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Good time for an ad. Oh, before I do the ad read, Agent Carter Season 2 premiere date was pushed back.
Thanks, Obama.
Basically,
yeah.
Yes, pushback for
State of the Union.
Yeah, State of the Union address. So you all will live.
Yeah,
it'd be fine.
That was hysterical.
Hey Tim, you're not going to see where Spider-Man is filming?
I mean, all those Marvel movies are filming in Atlanta now, so it's just whenever a movie films, I could just go up there.
I mean,
I mean, I did apply to be a freelance journalist for one reputable comic book site, but never heard back from them. So. I was going to say screw him, but not really.
No, you don't want to burn that. Don't burn that bridge on live, YouTube. You know, don't burn that bridge. What I was going to say is maybe what you can do is show up and try to be an extra. You know,
yeah, that would also involve me driving to Atlanta.
You're not that far away, dude.
Yeah, but it depends on when they film. I mean, if it's during the weekend, maybe. If it's during the week, yeah, that's not happening.
Yeah, that's true.
Right, so. I got you. That's so funny.
All right. All right, so this episode of Comic Book Chronicles is sponsored by Busted Tees, your home for funny, awesome, cool t-shirts that are sure to get your friends' attention. Busted Tees puts many of their popular shirt designs on sale each week. Choose from several eye-catching t-shirts inspired by pop culture, such as Jarvis is My Co-Pilot, Avengers Age of Ultron, Nelson and Murdoch, Avocados at Law, Daredevil, Central City Running Club, The Flash, and much more are on sale. To help keep our podcast free, order from Busted Tees by going to cspn.us, that's cspn.us, then clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. Click on the Busted Tees banner and then shop for awesome t-shirts. Busted Tees through cspn.us. Do it today.
Nice.
Let's get clickbait. Let's see. Comic book news from the last 2 weeks. Only thing, this is probably will only interest a few of us, but Amazon launched an online screenwriting app. So for you creative people out there, Amazon's got you covered with a free tool.
Did you ever check it out?
I did that day you sent it to me. I mean, I just, I think I read the articles on it. I never actually pulled up the thing to see what it looked like, though.
I got you.
Oh, that's cool. It's a free screenwriting app.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed. Marvel Hero debuts in first ongoing series with Kanan Nimzik.
Yeah, so this is the Mockingbird. I think I feel like we probably has talked about this before, but it's the Mockingbird one. Yeah. So I'm not sure why this one came out then, but I guess either it was.
Yeah, they announced stuff and then a month or so, I guess right before, well, it's not even the FOC date because I don't think they have a date yet. They do it again, like official.
So yeah, and I figured that's what this was. I was like, let me just go ahead and throw this in here.
Important news, the final issue of Secret Wars slips into 2016.
I'm not sure what sound effect this should have. I don't know if it's the sad trombone.
Yeah, go with that.
The sad trombone, because I think we all sort of suspected as much, given what part of the year we're in right now.
Yeah, which is going to mess up event of the year. But that's a whole other story for another show.
Right.
Marvel is going to publish free collection of of 14 of their hip-hop variant covers.
Coincidentally, at the same time as Shoot Secret Wars 9 comes out.
So I'll be picking up my free magazine. And speaking of free...
I was about to say, you know what's funny about that? About to say something. Real quick about that. If it's free, that means you can pick up one or two if there's no limit. And you could, you know, hack up one of them and create little prints for yourself, you know?
Right.
Yeah, I was going to say, speaking of free, I know at least my shop was giving away a 2016 calendar.
I was about to say, yeah.
Oh, I did not get that.
Mine's downstairs. I forgot to bring it up. But
nice.
I was flipping through it. I was like, ooh, I like all these pictures they chose.
Yeah.
So basically, it's all like the number one covers.
Okay.
Seems like it, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Look, Daredevil. Oh, Patsy Walker and the, the Spider-Man.
Yeah, some of them they combined, and some just get a full page. Black Panther was one.
I'll do a Avengers.
Yeah, that's December, if I remember correctly.
Guardian, Extraordinary, X-Men, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, the usual suspects.
Yeah.
They also, I don't know if this was free or this was already there, but they had this free previews magazine. This might be old, though. I'm not sure.
I got that, too.
A couple of them. Yeah.
The main character in Paul Dini's new Batman graphic novel is Paul Dini himself. I posted this news on the site today. You know, I got it a couple days ago. A true Batman story drawn by Eduardo Risso will recall a night in 1993 when Dini was mugged and savagely assaulted by two men in Los Angeles while walking home. Dini suffered some severe injuries. The zygomatic arch in his skull was shattered and was hospitalized after the attack. Damn.
Yeah.
Okay. Ta-Nehisi Coates reveals the early concept art of his Black Panther comic, art by Brian Stillfreeze.
Yeah, I think He-Man Stelfreeze was kind of tweeting out links or tweeting out stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like what I saw.
Collaborative, creative process, especially for someone who's new to the art form, you know? Like someone coming straight from prose writing into comic book writing is going to have a little bit of a culture shock. So I think this is actually gives us a lot of insight into how you have to change your creative process.
Indeed.
You know, to get to, work in comics.
All right. And any variant news?
Actually, I think there was. Or maybe not. I think it was. No, I might have probably put it up. But check out that Eddie Liu link. He did a DC Heroes Elderly Paintings there. It was actually some pretty decent work.
Cool.
We actually got through the news pretty quickly.
Well, you know, it's a holiday week. We can sometimes run through a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
Let's see. Today's podcast is also sponsored by MyComicShop.com. Go to CSPN.us, then click on the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, click on the My Comic Shop banner and order from a vast selection of new releases, back issues, vintage classics, graphic novels, and more to be delivered right to your door. Why bother slipping to the local comic book store when you can order your books online? My Comic Shop through CSPN.us. Do it today.
Yeah.
So the way we'll do it is we'll talk about the books that came out on November 26th and then get to the books for this week. That sound good to everyone?
Sure.
Sounds all right.
Oh, Dirt, that it hit. It's cool. Oh, I forgot to add some because I did read Silk number one.
You know what I was going to say? You could take your time. You could even like pull up like a list from Comic List that lets you, you know, kind of remember what you read from last week because, you know, we were putting these...
That was Dirt added his for these actually for this week, so we have to wait to read those. And actually, Agent 70 did the same thing.
What's up?
Rip your water.
What'd I do?
No.
Nothing major. He had, Roddy had split the sheet to, for 11-26 and then 12-2.
Oh, you got some books from this week in there.
Oh, my bad. Oh,
no. Okay, it's actually both, so that's fine. You can just talk about whichever one's.
Now I see. First. Oh, my bad. I didn't even realize. Like, the talk about splitting the sheet just went completely past me because I did it so late just now. I was just like kind of running through the list.
Yeah, that's, like I said, no problem. Let's see.
I might be with Dirt on this click of the week, but we'll get to that later.
What is this? Oh, ooh, okay. See, that's another one I haven't read yet.
Oh, man, it was great. But anyway, like that, we'll get to it.
I got to scroll all the way down to get to that click of the week. Oh, my God, where the heck is it?
Well, no, because he...
It's in his top...
Oh, okay.
So anyway, riveting podcast.
Everyone listening or viewing is like, just get off.
Like, what are you guys talking about? Get out. Why are you confused?
So, well, okay, let's start off with, you got something to start off with, Tim? Or?
I was going to ask Agent 70 about, I guess, one of the big books from last week, Dark Knight 3, The Master Race.
Hmm.
Yeah, still not a fan of that title. So, just very quickly, you know, we always talk about the variant covers we pick up, and I guess we'll talk about some of the hip-hop covers that we picked up last week and this week. But I wanted to touch on the variant covers that came out for Dark Knight 3. You know, there were a couple really nice covers, one for one by Mark Silvestri and one by Greg Capullo. And I know that there were retailer incentive exclusives. One of the high price ones was the Jim Lee variant, and I asked the dude at the counter at Midtown, "Hey, how much is the Jim Lee variant?" He's like $650. I'm like, "No, thank you. I'm just gonna stick to my regular cover." $650. Yeah, I mean, if you want to see who else contributed to the retailer variant covers, you can flip open the book to the first page, and they do list all the creators on the very first page. So, you know, what we have here is Azzarello and Frank Miller teaming up. You can sort of tell that it's mostly Azzarello doing the writing, and even some of the big plot points and the beats, you know, that are touched on in the book. You can sort of tell that you know, this is Azzarello's work. Andy Kubert provides the artwork. The book is a halfway. It's halfway between requiring you to have read DK2 and being an easy jump-on point. And that's pretty much where I kind of found myself struggling with the latter half of the book. The first part of the book is fine. The first part of the book, you know, is really a great introduction to the Dark Knight world. It establishes that there is a new status quo, that there is, spoiler alert, for a book that's 2 weeks old, that you know, that that Bruce Wayne is not active as Batman anymore, but there are still various members of the DC hero universe that are active and doing things. One of them apparently had a kid. You know, you can sort of guess who that was. Actually, who both of them were. They had multiple children. And you know, there's an appearance by someone who appears to be Batman in this book, and it turns out to be someone else. And again, like I said, once we get to the tail end of the book, it made me kind of regret at least not finishing reading DK2. I know I stopped buying it because I just stopped being interested in it way back when, but I should be able to pick up a digital copy or just find a copy in the bookstore and just read that before I get too confused by what's happening in DK3. It was okay. I know that Dirt had good things to say about this. It's a shame that he's not on tonight so that he could tell us what exactly he liked about the book. I would like to hear whether or not he thinks DK2 is required reading before reading this. And I think that's really what my take on this is, that it's a good jumping on point, at least the beginning part of the issue. Once you get to the latter half, it does kind of throw you for a loop, and you have to figure out how we got from where we ended DK1 to this point. So, but otherwise, it's not bad. I'm glad that it's Kubert doing the art and not Miller, because I think Miller's art has gotten to the point where he's probably turning off more people than he draws in. He does do the mini comic with the Atom, no pun intended, right? Which actually does dovetail nicely into the story. That's probably the most effective part of this, is that they actually dovetail the Atom story into the greater story of DK3, or at least in this issue. So the bottom line is, it's not a bad start to the series. I would suggest you read it, especially just to see if any of your favorite characters from the original Dark Knight series are evolving and progressing in ways that you might like.
Nice. Yeah, I do plan on giving it a read at some point here. Got to play catch up on
a lot of things.
Yeah, about everything. Might as well say. Let's see, Superman 46. I'm enjoying having Howard Porter on as the artist here. That's at least brought my enjoyment level up. I originally wasn't too fond of the story that Jin Yang, I believe is the writer, was doing with Clark. But now that he's taken Clark to the out west, and he's become he's finding arena, sort of like WWE style stage fights with gods of stories or something or another. It's different, but yet unique. I felt like they did a better job of showing the inside world of professional wrestlers better than Ringside did, which also came out last week. But so far, it's probably one of my more favorite issues of Superman I've read from the new writer. So.
Cool. I did read that. Now that I remember, now that I think about it, I did read that issue.
Mm. Yeah, it's hard to think back to what exactly happened in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know, right? There's a book from this week that Mike touches on the wrestling thing.
Which
yeah.
is really good. I like that.
Yeah, I did too.
I like that. My notes mentioned that particular issue, but we'll get to it.
Yeah.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I love it. I love it. There's so much out there that we just, it's beyond us to keep track of it all.
Yep.
So
fun. Let's see. Let me go around and see what I have.
Just going to quickly mention other, because like I said, now I can't remember exactly what happened in some of this stuff, but Batman Robin Eternal number 8, Grayson 14, We Are Robin 6. I guess both Grayson and We Are Robin, I guess, are preludes to Robin War, which we'll get to later in this week's reviews.
Which I did not read, but go on.
Yeah.
I reviewed it for theclicknation.com.
Nice.
All right. So is that it for DC from last week, or are we...
that I've read, it is.
Pretty sure I don't have any from last week.
Oh, yeah, I remember the Superman issue now. Yeah, this was kind of weird. You know what's funny about the Superman issue? We finally get an idea what the hell... whatchamacallit, Hoarder, Root, and
oh, yeah.
what their plan is. So, what the whole effect of the draining of Superman's powers, is leading to. We at least get that.
For a second, I thought you said Hoarder and Groot. I'm like, wait.
Oh, Hoarder Root.
Okay.
Yeah, Hoarder Root. That awful name.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Well, then, let us do this. Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur number 1. Just get that one out of the way. That was a quite adorable book.
Nice.
It really didn't, recall. There we go. Do you see the variant cover? You should see a variant cover on the screen. Whose cover is that? Because that is not who I thought it was.
I haven't got the foggiest, dude. This is one of the newer albums.
Oh, shoot. I knew it was. It wasn't what I thought it was, and whatever. But anyway, regardless. I'm sure somebody will.
I'll Google it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
But it was pretty cool. There's an introduction to Lunella Lafayette. I think she's a young girl who's pretty smart for her age, way too smart for her own good, some would say. If she ends up being one of another Amadeus Cho's, I wouldn't be surprised. Mm-hmm. But here we have her going through her school day, and the story's being kind of told from her perspective, as you would think. Going through the day, dealing with her parents, dealing with school, pretty much seemingly being the smartest one there. And then we have this other story that is in the past, which sets it up. Apparently, she's also looking for, like, she's so smart, she knows that, hey, about the Kree and the things that they've done, so she's done a lot of research on this stuff. She's even melted this kind of metal detector-looking thing to look for Kree artifacts or whatever around her neighborhood. And I guess because of the Terrigen Mist stuff, so she's been kind of looking into all that stuff. So, we have this other story where she ends up finding something that starts going into this other story from the past with Moon Boy and Devil Dinosaur, who find the self-same object, and that object ends up being activated, and Moon Boy ends up getting beat up, let's just say, because it's not entirely sure whether he's actually dead or not, mm-hmm. but he basically gets beat up real bad, and the portal's still open, and it's like he just basically told Devil Dinosaur, like, yep, go hunt, look for whatever thing it is. He goes through the portal along with some of the other people, some of the other, I can't remember what they called them, the people that they usually fight against back from then. So all of those end up going into the present, and they meet up with Lunella. And that's pretty much it, because she's trying to run him off, and this big dinosaur staring in her face like, hey, how you doing? And then just carries her off, and then that's it. But outside of that, it's a like I said, outside of not much happening outside of we get the introduction to her, and then the story just ends with her getting carried off by Devil Dinosaur. So, but it was intriguing enough to want to see what happens to it next. Like, I'm not sure what kind of legs this book is gonna have, but you can't really tell that off of one issue. But I'm kind of here to kind of see what goes on with it.
Yeah, I wasn't digging it as much as I thought I was going to. It lost started to lose interest during the Moon Boy portion of it. I didn't care about him.
Oh, okay.
Which I got why they put that part in there, because you're sure you had to, something had to happen to get these people from there to here,
The album homage, the cover homage is Vince Staples' Summertime
of Six. Summertime of Six, yeah. Which I hear that's a really good album. But
you got me.
Yeah.
All right. What's up next?
Guardian. Oh, nope. Let's not do that one because I halfway even remember.
I did read it if you want to. Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying this run or volume of Guardians a lot more than the first one. Maybe because everything's already set up and we're good to go. But it was fun watching this Kree survivor come and want to take her anger out on Peter Quill for her world, Kree home world being destroyed.
Mm-hmm. Right, which I don't remember when that happened. Did that happen during Black Vortex or something? Or?
It did.
Okay, that's probably why I don't remember. So what?
I said, yeah, during Black Vortex.
Gotcha.
she's strong, and it takes the entire Guardians to stop her, and I think they do at some point, but now... I can't remember how it ended now.
Right, so I'm flipping through. Luckily, I pulled it up on my tablet, so... basically, Ben Grimm knocks her the hell out.
Right.
Then... Which she revives.
Yeah.
She revives because, the weapon that she's wielding, it has some level of, I think, sentience and...
Oh, that's right, because Drax was holding it and it activated, and then everybody got tossed. Yeah.
Right. So, what's funny? It's funny that you guys mentioned this. I couldn't help but think that the plot for this story in Guardians is straight out of the J.J. Abrams reboot of Star Trek, and Peter Quill is Spock.
There's something you would never...
Right? and think about it now, right? Think about it now. Like, she basically says, you're going to see both of your home planets destroyed. And I'm like,
Where have I heard that from? You're right, yeah.
Where have I heard that from?
I was like, it's not two Peter Quills.
Yeah, I was like, wait, Peter Quill was far from Spock, but now I remember that. Another thing about this issue, now that I'm thinking about it, I love Ben in this, and it's not like Ben's any different from where he has been in the past, but for something like him being with this team and their hints and their interactions with him, which we'll also get to later on.
Right.
I
think it's liberating. Really great. I think it's liberating for the writers who are writing the character.
Yeah.
Because they feel like this is Ben Grimm being reinvigorated as a character, so I can bear on board with that as well. Mm-hmm. So
and it's also kind of a turn that's like it's weird because it kind of had me thinking about like, wow, I miss like Thing 2-in-1.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the when it was he's his team up book from back in the day. I, sure. like, I kind of miss that because it was some pretty good stories out of that, given what it was.
Absolutely.
Hey, side note, are we doing clicks for last weekend this week or just one for?
That's a good question.
I'm just doing this week's.
Okay.
Well, I was about to say, because I could do one for last week, too.
I have to remember
I'd have to guess about to what I picked from last week.
I just had to, you know what's funny is that because I was flipping through our review copies, I was like, now I remember what my click of the week was for last week.
Mm.
You know, so, all right.
So, next up, hey, let's get into the Star Wars block while we're here. Chewbacca number 4. 2 words is the only thing you need to know about from this issue. Iron Wookiee.
That's pretty good.
That's
pretty good. That was a highlight of the issue. I think the main highlight for this, honestly, one of the things that runs through my head when I see how vibrant the color is in comic books nowadays, is that so much of the art that we see in comics, specifically the Chewbacca line art, which is kind of simple, it's not as detailed as you think it would be to portray a hairy Wookiee, but because of the coloring and the nuances and the depth that the color provides, it really adds to the art. And, you know, this is stuff that could not be made 15 years ago, given how far computer coloring has come.
Right. So it's pretty cool. I can't look at the girl without thinking young Natasha for some stupid reason. I know that she doesn't look that much like her, but I also recognize
it's Nodo. Yeah, because it's Nodo. Yeah,
right. So that's gonna happen. But outside of that, it was a decent read. Like I said, she turns into Iron Wookiee at some point.
What number issue was this?
4. There's one more.
Yeah.
I think I've read
and they found themselves in a predicament because basically they had this plan. Or was like, well, they're gonna get rid of. They're pretty much liberated everything, but the Empire was coming. And they were there as of this issue, and they fought the Empire, who was already on the ground, and they set a bomb in an astromech that was supposed to get rid of the guy they've been going up against, and that was on his way to a shuttle. Well, he was on the way in a shuttle to a Star Destroyer, but they got captured in the end, and now they're either on that same shuttle or going to that same ship.
Towards the bomb.
Yes. Right.
That's what you take away from the end. It's like, yeah, we need a new plan.
Yep. And that, yeah, exactly. That was what was said on the last page. Yeah. Like, oh, yep. So that was pretty decent.
Yeah, no, I had a lot of fun reading that. I did.
Yeah. Which has been, it was kind of a light fun book. It was. Sure. I don't think there's anything that's just gonna be groundbreaking out of it or going into the movies or anything. But right. Just a little side story. We were Chewbacca doing his thing with somebody.
Sure. Let me touch on the Marvel book that I remembered to put on my list. That's Groot number 6. It's the last issue of this volume of Groot, because in All New, All Different, it's going to be Groot and Rocket, if I recall correctly. You know, it's going to be a buddy book, Groot and Rocket.
Oh, yeah, that's right, with the Run-DMC cover.
Exactly. So
we'll be buying that cover.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely. So this issue involves Rocket and Groot finally making their way to Earth, right? And they've got a checklist of things to do to try to experience. One thing that they have to check off is learn about Star-Lord's music. They actually watch Carol's movie, which is Star Wars. They get into a fight with a supervillain, or a bunch of supervillains. They party with the X-Men. There's a lot of like kind of cool things here. But one thing that we get, and it's my favorite part of the book, is that it kind of delves into a little bit of a retcon and involves, you know, the first appearance of the Groot creatures in the Marvel Universe. And there's a bit of a retcon there, and it involves how we get this particular Groot creature and how he alienates himself from the kind of warlike group that he's with, that his race is, and, you know, how he gets exiled. So, you know, this is actually a really cool, touching story. I, you know, it brought a smile to my face, and this is really a clear-cut candidate for, believe it or not, Click of the Week for last week. You could read this. It's a completely standalone story. You're familiar with the characters, and it will bring a smile to your face.
Nice. Cool. Let's see. Vader number 13.
Was Vader last week or this week?
Last week.
Okay.
Yeah, because we got Star Wars this week. But, hey, I don't know if you've noticed this, but Darth Vader's a bad joker. And he proved it in 13 because he went up against, because as Vader Downs continues in this issue, he's stranded on whatever planet they're on because Luke knocked him out of the sky with his X-Wing. Actually, mm-hmm. they're both stranded on there, but the rebellion got wind of it and went en masse to that planet, which already had a rebel base on it. So the rebel base had already struck out. That was on there, and this is. Believe this, that was them going through that particular part where Vader's just screwing everything up.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a pretty good issue from that one. I can't remember if anything else.
Basically, we have the supporting characters that that are introduced in the Vader book interacting with some of the more established characters, namely Luke Skywalker.
Right, that's right. That did happen.
So, right, that happens at the towards the end of the book. And it's just, you know, it's a good chapter in the Vader Down crossover.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess we'll touch on the next chapter.
Yeah,
we'll get through that. You want to just do a couple of rapid fire
stuff? Yeah, let's quickly get through last week and focus on this week.
Yeah, because this week there's so many books out.
Here, let me go again and throw these two out real quick then. Silver Surfer number 15?
Yes.
Hey, remember a few minutes ago when we told you Secret Wars number 9 got pushed back?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this book kind of ties into that book just a little bit. Just a bit. But outside of that, it is the ending of, I believe this was the last issue for that. Going into, yes, because what they find themselves in between worlds trying to reshape their version of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
But they end up finding out that, hey, the universe that Doom took over is still in play and, in fact, is getting back to normal with some changes, as we now know them to be from everything that's coming out in the last few weeks. And then them placing themselves or getting back into the world or heading towards that world, rather.
Right.
But
so it's kind of, I was going to say, it's interesting that Surfer, and it makes absolute sense, and
totally.
the Dawn Greenwood character as well provides an additional perspective on these characters who are outside of the reality that we are dealing with right now in Secret Wars.
Right.
You know? And trying to bring back, or at least restore some semblance of normalcy to reality, right? So what we have is that Secret War. There's a Secret Wars number 9 reference. They're just like, well, you're going to have to wait to find this one out.
Exactly.
Wait 2 more months.
Exactly. And but what's funny about that is the last page, the coming soon, is that Silver Surfer number 1 is going to come out in January after Secret Wars number 9. So there's not like a new issue coming out this month. You know what I mean?
Right. All right. So then we have New Avengers number 3, and that's going to round it out for me on that one.
I did enjoy New Avengers. 3.
It was pretty decent. Yeah.
The only thing I put down on my list, but I did read it.
Yeah. So basically, this was focused on Wiccan and Hulkling. Apparently, the short story is there are some people that come, there are some Kree Skrull hybrids that are trying to find their king who just so happened might be Hulkling.
Wasn't this not the week before?
Was it? I don't think it was last week. If it's not,
then
it's
number 3.
Yeah, maybe it was.
Maybe it was on 11/18.
Oh, shit, but never mind then. I thought I had it for last week, so.
Yeah, that was part of my catching up my stuff. I read it last week.
And you know, and I was doing that too, and I was like, well, because I tried to make sure whether that was last week.
That's fine, dude. Talk about it, because I'm looking at it, I'm like, wait, that didn't come out last week.
Go ahead, dude. So anyway, so it was a couple of weeks old. But it was basically more Hulkling and Wiccan focus. And
I knew like that they...
It was kind of... What's that?
I knew like that they went back to reference his whole upbringing and his heritage, because that hasn't been touched on in years.
Exactly. I was like, okay, yeah, I didn't think they were going to do that, but there you go. And I did like the part where they... there was a part where there was up in... So Hulkling gets kidnapped and Wiccan went with him. And then there was this guy that was like, well, you got to trial by fire and this, or you got to walk through that light and go through. Mm-hmm. And he was going on this long spiel about what's about Ben Apple. And then as soon as he finished, like, here, I found this sword here. What does this mean? And then the book was like, I think that just means you're king, dude. So after all that spiel, dude was talking, which that whole thing reminded me of Mighty Python in a way. Because if you've watched the Holy Grail, there's a part where actually Tim, the Enchanter, basically says, like, so if ye be men of valor, you know, or not men of valor, look no further, for death awaits you. And it was kind of along that lines.
Mm.
And then Teddy just like, yeah, here you go, sword, bow. So that was kind of funny.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
So that was a pretty good read.
Cool. Just very quickly, Silk number 1. This is obviously a good jumping on point if anyone is a fan of the Cindy Moon character. We understand now why she is doing what she's doing. Spoiler alert. one of the big things that they were talking about with the Cindy Moon character was that she was not on the side of the Angels anymore. Turns out that is part of her cover. She is working with S.H.I.E.L.D. and Mockingbird, who is definitely getting a lot more shine given her starring role on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So she's in the Spider universe. What's funny is that she's in the Spider books. She's in Amazing. Now she's in Silk. And, we see that that Silk is, undercover. She's playing the role of a criminal, but we also see the reappearance of a certain goblin-ish character. I'll leave it at that.
Yep. I picked up the hip-hop cover for it. I won't dig it out now, but I was pleasantly surprised by the number one issue.
Mm-hmm. The Silk number one. I'm not sure what cover this is homaging.
Most Deaths, The New Danger.
Ah, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. So before we move on to this week, the hip-hop covers from last week were the Silk cover, the Mos Def that Roddy just so kindly informed us about, the Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur cover that we were talking about earlier, the Venom Space Knight cover. I'm never going to read this book ever. this is the hip-hop cover.
I think that was one of the ones I had to say no to.
Yeah,
I don't blame you. Don't blame you at all. And last week, I also picked up, in terms of the DC books, the Wonder Woman Looney Tunes variant cover, which is Kill the Wabbit. And the Superman Looney Tunes variant cover, which is an homage to the Muhammad Ali cover.
He's a killer.
So this is, last week there were a few cool variant covers that came out.
Cool. Oh, there's one more I forgot from, I'm pretty sure this last week because I just checked, Shield number 12.
Oh, yeah.
So, real quick, apparently, I don't know if this takes, I guess this could have take place around time because I don't remember reading it, but basically the S.H.I.E.L.D. team is preventing Ragnarok.
Or a version of Ragnarok.
Of Ragnarok, thank you. Because apparently what we have is Scarlet Centurion comes, which as we know to be if I'm not mistaken, is a version of Kang.
Right.
Comes, kills Odin, Asgard goes nuts and starts attacking people on Earth. The Avengers get killed and mass hysteria happens. So but what ends up happening is S.H.I.E.L.D., our S.H.I.E.L.D. team, who we know from the series, beckons, calls Heimdall, because I guess they were one of the last ones on Earth,
mm-hmm.
or last ones still fighting the fight, I guess, at that point, and goes to Asgard and through space and time by way of Heimdall to stop it. So they get disguises, but they also come with various weapons.
Some really cool things.
Yes. So basically, as I have in my notes, is like S.H.I.E.L.D. stops Ragnarok by becoming the Avengers,
mm-hmm.
because they have like one of Iron Man's repulsors, one of Spider-Man's web shooters, Captain America's shield, Ant-Man's helmet, so and Quake's with them. So mm-hmm. there you go. But it was a pretty decent read.
It was a fun little issue. I remember.
Yeah, that. I enjoyed it. May was mouthing off to Odin, and mm-hmm. Coulson had to tell her to calm it down. Like, okay,
yeah, definitely.
But I enjoyed reading this book. So
one quick note on this is that the coming in January image, spoiler alert, prominently features Deathlok.
Oh yeah.
So we're going to see that character come back into play. You know, like in addition to the characters that we know from the TV show. You know, that are kind of like the main focus.
And I'm guessing is that Mockingbird that was flying or?
Yes. Yeah. Or gliding. Gracefully gliding. Falling.
Exactly. That was a slightly different uniform than we have seen her with lately. So.
Right. All right.
So cool. We're on to this week's now.
I think so. There's a ton of stuff out this week. Real quick, there are seven Marvel hip-hop covers out this week, and I picked them all up, damn it. Daredevil number one, this is the Tupac cover.
Mm-hmm. I copy it.
Yep.
There we go.
Nice, nice. The Red Wolf cover, the Method Man T'Cal cover.
T'Cal!
We got the Guardians of Infinity cover that Roddy was telling me was Kendrick Lamar.
I believe that's true, yeah.
Let's see. We have the All New Inhumans cover, which I was saying was Future. Nice.
I enjoyed the actual book too.
Yeah, it was good. We'll get to it. I'm just going through the covers right now. the Spidey, which is the
Carter.
Yeah, that's that. And we have the one cover that I think I got that neither of you got was the Uptown Saturday Night, the Camp Low cover for all new X-Men by Ed Disco.
Tim got it.
Oh, Tim got it too. Nice, nice, nice. And finally, I think the cream of the crop this week was the Mockingwood Osrar, only built for Cuban links, totally awesome Hulk.
Yes.
This cover is off the chain. Off the chain. So, with that said, let us get into the reviews for this week.
You know, I was going to do something, and I totally forgot before we went into this, because I was going to ask Tim how disappointing was Ringside, because that was going to lead into...
Yeah, I saw y'all moved on, so I was going to skip it, but... So Ringside came out last week. It's from a wrestling comic from Joe Keating, and I'm sorry, I forget the artist's name on it, but I wasn't really crazy about the art anyway, so there's that. And I don't know, just the story was just kind of boring.
Oh, no.
I hate to say. It just, I was excited for it because I like wrestling, and so a comic book about wrestling, hey, that sounds like a cool thing. But, I mean, it reminded me of Southern Bastards.
Okay.
Wait. Which I've only read like two issues of.
I was about to say, is that good or not?
Like, it seemed like it was trying to mimic Southern Bastards. You know, this old-timer getting caught back up in the wrestling world and, like, gets beat up. And he's trying to help a friend, but we haven't learned who that friend is or why he's helping them yet, because it's just the first issue.
Right.
So, I mean, there may be more, you know, things to come, but just off the first issue, I might just be a one-and-done.
Well, that's all I had. Which actually perfectly goes into which the one I think I'm assuming everybody's read Guardians of Infinity.
Infinity number one.
Number one, yes.
How was that?
Dude.
That was a pretty good book. I liked that book.
All right, so here's the thing. So Roddy, I know, wants to talk about the second half.
Yes.
Let's just touch on what happens in the first half, right? So this book is by Dan Abnett and art by Carlo Barbieri. And what it does is kind of focuses on a splinter group of the Guardians of the Galaxy, which is, in this story, Groot, Rocket, and Drax. Mm-hmm. And they're off trying to guard the galaxy, but Rocket is basically on a treasure hunt. Right, I was going to say, he's basically on a treasure hunt. And what happened, the crux of the story is that they've reached this point where it's almost like a nexus of realities. It's not in Florida, it's not guarded by Man-Thing. It's a reality, it's a place in space where different times, where Guardians are basically from different times and spaces are intersecting, and that's the premise here, is that this is how we kind of cross over these various iterations of the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes, because we get the original Recipe Guardians come into play, because they meet up while Rocket and them are investigating this Nexus place. The OG Guardians come in.
Exactly.
Minus Gina Drake, which I don't know. I guess she's not a factor anymore. I don't know.
I think Gina Drake was part of Abnett's last run, so she may come back.
Yeah, she was in Guardians 3000. She was in that Secret Wars book.
Right.
Whatever that was called. I can't think of it now.
I totally forgot. Oh, sure.
Right, but then you know who also is Yondu.
Yeah, you're right. Yondu wasn't there either. So.
Right, so I think what it is I think Abnett probably cut down the roster somewhat, you know, because obviously Star-Lord's not here because we're not sure which Star-Lord he would want to put in this anyway.
Right, Gamora's not here.
Exactly. And then what we have is Guardians of the Galaxy from, I'm not sure what time and place.
They said 1016, I believe, was the date they put.
Right, which goes into the far distant past.
Right.
And what we get is a weird, a very strange-looking group of Guardians of the Galaxy that are pretty much completely new.
Right. Although that for the lead character, it looks like Nebula.
Nebula. I thought that was Nebula too.
I was like, and I'm thinking, that's probably not right. But you know, I'll go with it.
Right.
So. But that part of the book, we're good. Sorry.
Yeah, I was about to say that part of the book. We're like, okay, that's a good jumping on point for this book, right? Especially for longtime Guardians fans. Yeah. But it's the last story. It's the second story in the book, which is so much fun. Yes.
Is that the Jason Latour written one?
Yes, and Jim Chung art.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I need to go back to Second and Trials and get that hip-hop cover then. I'll decide after I read it.
I skipped that one. But
go on.
But yes, this story has to do with Ben Grimm and Rocket being stuck on a planet where apparently All they know from Earth are from the time where Ben was doing
Unlimited Class wrestling.
Yes, was doing Ultimate Fighting, or well, was wrestling basically.
It was super powered wrestling. That's
super
powered
wrestling.
Thank you.
Exactly. So what's happening is they're stuck on this planet and they're trying to get parts for their ship that is broken. So Ben decides to go into the room because, like I said, all these people that's in this arena know for him from the fight, and they know him as a monster, and they know him as a, basically, I guess the term y'all would use is a heel? I don't know wrestling.
No, here's the thing. What they know him as is the champion, right? Uh-huh. And my understanding of this was they know him as the champion. They basically have enough technology where they can pirate cable feeds.
Yeah, and that comes back up. Yeah.
And basically, they've intercepted these old cable transmissions of Unlimited Class Wrestling. Mm-hmm. And what they know him as is the champion of Unlimited Class Wrestling. I don't know where D-Man is in all this. But so basically, a bunch of contenders are stepping up to try to take him down. But what ends up happening is that he runs through the gamut. He runs mm-hmm. over all of them. And they just boo him because he can't be beat. He's like the John Cena, right? Of a non-scripted wrestling.
Oh, and that's why they were booing him then.
Right. Okay. Right. They're booing him because they can't put up anyone that can win.
Right. And so Ben's up here trying to be like, and so Rocket's like, look, you can't talk to these people. Let's just go in there, take what we want, and let this be over. And Ben's trying to like, no, we could do this way because you know these people are not bad, and you know they're you know, schlubs or whatever for the most part, and they're just like, no, they just need to see, you know, just need to see that there's another side to all of this. So he keeps going in there fighting, and he keeps going fighting, and the prize money for fighting the sparks, and the parts get worse and worse, because apparently not finding anything that they actually need. So,
right.
They buy some tucker rolls. So.
Exactly. So they basically, yeah, this world remembers him wrong, or at least mm-hmm. only an aspect of his wrestling career, and so you know, Rocket is of a mind to just say, hey, let's just take what we want, let's rob them, get the hell out of here. What we have then is match after match of Ben Grimm taking down their best wrestlers, and they're just not able to get the parts that they need, and it's just an ongoing frustrating cycle. And you know, Ben is beaten down, and Rocket's just, you know, frustrated all to hell. And it comes to a point where Ben is like, I wanted to show you guys what it's like to be a hero, but all you wanted was a heel. And I was like, oh my god, yo, this is so meta wrestling.
Exactly. So wrestling terms thrown all about. There's a battle royale at the end, and Ben's pretty much.
And there's a Ric Flair reference too. You want to be the man?
Oh yeah. Which is probably the only thing I actually remember from actually watching wrestling. So go figure.
Right.
So finally, you know, Ben's going in and handling his own. Rocket comes in and's like, all right, enough of this, and just changes the script, let's say, mm-hmm. and they get the part and they leave. So I enjoyed the story thoroughly, and even though I don't like wrestling and I don't watch wrestling.
And there's a great Golden Girls reference at the end.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. And there was a Matlock one, too, also.
Yes. There's a lot of fun things in this second story. Honestly, if this was the first story, I would have been all on board.
Exactly. Yeah. So based on that is the potential click of the week, but I think it's tough
to give click of the week to a half story.
Exactly. That's the first story was all right, but it looked like mm-hmm. you only get just a little bit of it, and you don't know where that what's going, because that's the one that's going to be going on, unless they're going to be doing some more of these side backstories where they're going, like the other Guardians, which right. if they do that and they keep up, hey, that's good.
Gotcha.
Y'all have me interested in this now.
It's a lot of fun.
It's worth checking out.
It's a lot of fun.
All right, let's see. All different Avengers, number 2.
Oh, I didn't get a chance to read that.
I didn't read that either.
I read it sometime this afternoon. More the Avengers assembling together to take on the Warbringer. Vision makes his debut along with Ms. Marvel and Nova into the main story, at least, because the first issue had a little backup story involving Ms. Marvel and Nova. And at the end, we get the final member of the group making her debut. I believe that's the last person to show up. Nothing besides that, nothing really too much goes on. Mark Waid writes a funny... Actually, yeah, Miles Morales shows up in a couple of books this week. I was going to say, Waid does write a very humorous Miles Morales, but his guest appearance in another book that we'll get to later was my actual favorite. Adam, I think it's Adam Kubert's doing the art on this, because Andy's doing the Dark Knight 3, I think.
Okay.
Hopefully, I got that right.
Yes.
But, yeah, it was an all right issue. Nothing, we didn't learn too much. I think they said the name of the guy that bought Avengers Tower from Tony. But besides that,
Oh, the art in this looks really nice.
Yeah,
I'm just flipping through it right now, just taking a look at it.
Kind of disappointed that Azrar wasn't doing it, but since they're going to be trading off, hopefully, I guess the next arc will come on and kill it.
Cool, nice. All right. Did anyone here read Daredevil number one?
Nip.
Not yet.
All right. Well, I won't spoil too much. I mean, we know what the general premise is, right? We know that Daredevil has kind of been reset, right?
Right.
Back in New York.
Right. He's back in New York. Spoiler alert. His secret identity has been restored. We don't know how. We don't know why.
Okay.
We know why. We know why, right? But we don't know how.
Mephisto did it.
Right. We don't know how yet, right? But the point is it's been restored, right? So, what we open with is, we jump kind of head, we're headlong into a criminal case that Matt Murdock is dealing with as a newly minted assistant district attorney in New York County. That is that's Manhattan for all you non-New Yorkers. And, we deal with this case that involving a witness that Daredevil is protecting, and we're introduced to his new sidekick, which is Blindspot, or his apprentice. And
not Gambit.
No, not Gambit. Definitely not Gambit. But we do see the hair and the head sock resemblance. But beyond that, that's the only resemblance that you have. And we're introduced to the main villain of the story, who is really creepy. It's a very creepy visual. I give Ron Garney, who's on this, and I have mixed feelings about Garney, because I feel like the colorists and whoever's inking him really do the bulk of they carry a lot of his more simple line work. But in reading this, it looks like Garney did have a lot of lead time on this. He definitely put in a lot of effort. But I do believe that the colors really make this book, because the coloring is very stark. If you flip through it, it's not the vivid brights is definitely a noir feel to it. So, it really does help to sell the story and the mood that's being set. So this is a good jumping on point. Like I said, with the spoiler alert at the beginning, this is a far cry from, although it does acknowledge where we've come from, right? With the Wade stuff in San Francisco. It does acknowledge that, but it's a 180 from that.
Is this also 8 months later type of situation?
Yes.
Or we don't
yes.
know, okay.
Yes, it's roughly 8 months later.
Right.
Yeah, but it's good. It's a good jumping on point.
I remember the preview art looked like it was very dark.
Yeah, it does. It is. It's very dark.
It's foggy in it.
Yeah.
Thank you. another issue I enjoyed was All New Inhumans, number one.
Yes.
By Charles Soule, James Asmus, and Stefano Caselli.
Yeah, more Charles Soule books. If I forgot to mention it, Charles Soule is on Daredevil number one.
Yeah. The Crystal is leading an Inhumans group to be ambassadors around the world. They're basically chasing the Terrigen mist that's spreading across the world and helping humanitarian efforts to save the new humans being born. Mm-hmm. Also, I guess, protect the countries that the mist is traveling to, being peacekeepers between the new humans and the society. It stars Gorgon, Crystal, Grid, who debuted was a Free Comic Book Day issue of All New, All Different Avengers, at least the back portion for the Uncanny Inhumans.
Mm-hmm.
Flint, Naha, or Naja, however you say it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a backup story, which debuts a mutant that joins their cause also, because this person wants to help find a way to save the mutant race from the Terrigen Mist.
Right, it's definitely a tie-in to the Uncanny Inhuman stuff.
Yeah, so art is great from Stefano Caselli. The whole, was it RIV? Sort of, it's like
a
ship. Yeah, the transport and the ship that they travel on. Oh, and the Sky Spears. Gotta talk about the Sky Spears.
Mm-hmm.
At first I was like, was it 18 or however many they list fall, these spears being fallen from the sky from space and just landing in all these different locations. So when the humans get close to it, I guess enhances their powers. Because my first thought was, you know, why do humans think that this thing has anything to do with them, but them getting close to it and enhancing their powers, and then some of the lettering on it is like old inhuman
language.
Yeah, language. So more, there's more to learn about these sky spears, which is also what their secret mission is, to study them.
Right, right. So this is James Asmus and Charles Soule sharing the writing duties on both of these stories. So, you know, you could definitely see that Soule has kind of split up the load of writing in humans between himself and James Asmus. So it's nice to see that, you know, there is a unifying voice to these books, but it's good that that Soule is kind of easing up, you know, like dividing the load.
Yeah.
So hopefully these books continue to come out on time.
All New X-Men number one.
I actually read this.
I liked it.
I had no intentions of it, because I was like, I did not know half of what was going on with that part of the X-Men section. But yeah, it was actually pretty cool.
I read it. I actually didn't mind Bagley's art in this. It was actually kind of, you know, refreshing.
Same here. Like when the preview art came out, well, I guess a month or however long ago, I was just like, it looks all right.
Mm-hmm.
But it looked. I think the colorist helped a lot too.
See what I mean?
But it's the all new X-Men minus Jean Grey, but add Wolverine is still there.
Mm-hmm.
It's 23 and Kid Apocalypse and Edie.
Oh, that's who that is. That's Edie. Yeah. Oh, I read this whole thing. I didn't realize who that was.
So, the X-Men, the all new X-Men have been, they're kind of scattered. Some are together. They're just taking it easy, traveling the country. They want to make a difference.
Hangs it's all about TARDIS.
Yeah. The story is more about Cyclops, who's off on his own.
Mm-hmm.
Young Cyclops on his own, shadowing this ghost of Cyclops. Is that what they're called?
Yes.
These young people with powers that seem to be worshiping adult Cyclops. Who, between this issue and Extraordinary X-Men number 3, we learn the fate of adult Cyclops.
Yeah, we do.
Yep. It follows suit with Secret Wars, apparently. Sort of. Hmm.
Sort of.
Well, no, because he didn't attack any humans.
Well, yeah, I know. But
his
fate is the same, yeah.
We still don't know how he ever got a Phoenix egg either, but
yeah,
just ignore that.
Yeah.
They just had it, damn it.
Yeah, I know, right? It's like, because what else would they have?
Right.
But but outside of this, I was like, outside of not reading the original All New X-Men, but knowing, you know, kind of sort of what was going on with that, like, I know they came from the past, and they did a pretty decent job of saying, hey, you know, I'm assuming that was Scott that was narrating.
Mm-hmm.
The story, and just kind of slightly bringing people up to some sort of speed with that, but also going with a current narrative at the same time. So you kind of get a sense of what's going on. You can kind of piece together, you know, the other parts of it, at least as far as what's going on in this book. So it was cool. The stuff with Scott was like, okay. I figured there was, you know what? Do you remember that one part where he was sitting with a girl,
mm-hmm.
and then the attack happens? Did anybody else think about Ultimatum?
What happened in Ultimatum?
Say again?
Did anybody? So I haven't fully read Ultimatum, so I probably shouldn't be even mentioning this. But
which one is Ultimatum?
I believe that was the one with the
Is that where Spider-Man died?
I believe so.
Oh wait, is that where they kill like half the universe or whatever?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't read that. But it was a big flood or something, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that part right there just reminded me of that, because it was like all of a sudden you see them talking and then phoosh, something happened. And that was pretty much the only part of Ultimatum I actually remember, because I didn't really read it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, that's what I was like. It was kind of giving me that kind of a vibe, though. I don't know if that was intentional or that's just me thinking one way or the other. But the rest of the story with Scott and, you know, him trying to deal with the ghost and ultimately being found by the rest of the crew was pretty good. So, and it shows that he doesn't, because, I mean, granted, we already knew this, but it shows that he really doesn't need to use his power to kind of handle himself.
Yeah, but yeah, so far, good introduction.
Yeah. Which I guess, wait, did Extraordinary come out this week?
Or am it I, did. Yes. Yeah, might as well talk about that. To Jean Grey and Old Man Logan catch up. The X-Men and kids in X-Haven fight for their lives in Limbo.
Which, I wasn't here when y'all talked about it first. That seems to be the worst possible place to set up.
Well, it's especially fine if you have proper precautions.
Sure. Clearly, those precautions can't fail.
Right. When those proper precautions fail, then all hell breaks loose, no pun intended.
Sure.
You know? Especially when the one person has to stay, be awake and not knocked out to keep the bad things away.
Right.
Yeah. That's not rife with problems.
So let me tell you, real quick, without going too deep into what actually happens here, but the bottom line is this is more like an assembly type, you know, like we're kind of assembling the team through the first three issues of this. This issue read so much, and the series has read so much more like old school X-Men. There's a lot of fun, there's a lot of action, there's a lot of, you know, like short bursts of melodrama. It's not like a full issue of just talking heads. It reads very, very much like older X-Men stuff, and I give Jeff Lemire a lot of credit. This is the X-Men book that, you know, that X-Men fans need to be reading, because it's a lot of fun.
Okay. Let's see.
Are we in rapid fire yet, or are we still
going? Yeah, as far as
our... Do Star Wars 13?
The hour mark, yeah, we might as well get into rapid.
You want to do Star Wars 13, Roddy?
Sure.
I knew we want to get the Star Wars stuff in.
Yeah, I guess I'll touch on Strange and Vision while we're at it. But, sure, Star Wars number 13, as we said with Darth Vader, this is continuing Vader down. We see matchups between R2 and BT, the two Astromechs on opposite signs. We see Han going up against Aphra, which is, that's a little funny part about it, because they're acting like, well, maybe they're not even acting. Because I remember within Darth Vader, Aphra was like, huh, the infamous Darth Vader, I mean, the infamous is Han Solo. I'm like, do you know him? I'm like, nah, just now. And that kind of comes back up, and then Han has a turn where he's doing the same thing to her, but it sounds like he may actually know of her, or have heard of her, seemingly, so they may have heard of each other, just playing like it wasn't, and there's a shootout between them two. There's there's that famous Wookieism about tearing off of limbs, which comes into play, you know, because all the time they're pretty much trying to find Han and Chewie, or trying to find Luke, who got captured by Aphra and her droids at the end of Darth Vader, which we alluded to earlier. And then, like I said, battle ensues. Han and Aphra knock each other out.
This is a lot of fun. There's so much fun in this issue.
Yeah, you know, there was a shoot first reference in that little battle.
Yeah.
And BT goes crazy because R2, you know, after being outmatched at first, just kind of does a prequel thing. And,
right.
Right.
There's a lot of cool things in here. I give Deodato a lot of credit. His art, and I give, listen, all the Star Wars books to this date, and I'm including Chewbacca in there, you know, all the Star Wars books really benefit from Marvel throwing the best artists at them.
Oh, yeah, you see a lot of great detail in them, and
you know, detail, likenesses, the works, it's all there.
Yeah. So this was a pretty fun read. And at the end of this book, we see...
a confrontation.
Yes. We see Leia being stubborn as always, wanting to be out in the front line. And when her team get taken down, she ends up running up on Vader. Mm-hmm. And the book ends.
Right.
So we will see that in, what, Vader 14, I guess.
Right. So Dirt left us a couple of notes. And the one thing, he basically uses two thoughts. One is that the droids steal the show in this issue, and that's probably true.
Yeah, which they do in Vader, period, realistically.
Right. And the tension with Leia, we're referencing the final confrontation, the final scene, loses something because we know she survives, you know. So there's only so much, you know, that they can do with these, but I still had a blast reading this.
Yeah. See, and that's kind of the thing with the Star Wars books that I'm still liking, but also are kind of, because, I mean, let's face it, this is not 1977, and we have the original books that really don't have anything to go on, so they're just making up stuff as they go along. Here we are with stuff already pretty much written in, so they're just kind of writing in the in-between stuff. So stuff like, okay, Leia running up on Vader, sure, plausible, but if you're going by just the movies, it's like, well, wait a minute. It just seems like something that shouldn't just be happening just yet. But given this, and I think y'all talked about Star Wars 12, I believe, where it had all the lightsabers in the world.
Right.
And everybody had one, which was like, oh, okay, that's one of those things. Like, all right, I see what you're doing. But so it was still fun, but it was like, really?
Yeah, I agree with that.
What are you doing here?
I agree.
But you got to fill in some kind of way, and like I guess if they that we have all of the knowledge that we have of the movies, you can do stuff like that. But it's still kind of like, see, we got this in here, you know. build intention or whatever, even mm-hmm. though this stuff doesn't supposedly, which, you know, you can say a lot about that, though, because I'm like, yeah, a lot of stuff happens between movies, and sure, there's surely they had to run up on each other more than just in the movies, you know, so there had to be some sort of interaction, so you really can't just poo-poo it out there, but it still is kind of almost groan-inducing at times. That being said, I loved it.
Yeah, all right.
All right, cool.
All right, all right,
so we also should mention for Daredevil number one, he said, I guess it's okay, but like, didn't Matt go public with his ID? Is this another out of sync Secret Wars thing?
Yeah, I touched on that already. So
yeah, let's see.
Rapid fire?
Sure.
All right, let's go through these as quick as we can. See what Dirt read. Invincible Iron Man number 4. Anybody? Bueller?
I got three pages into it.
I liked it. It was good. It was the art by what you call Dave Marquez is pretty sweet.
That was my takeaway from the three pages I read so far. Man, this is good art.
Yeah, Marquez is going to town in this book, man, because he's getting to really flex some of the chops that maybe, you know, like you draw Spidey and Miles for such an extended run, you know, it's kind of nice to get into like a different hero with like different capabilities, and there's some martial arts action here too, which you definitely do not expect to see in an Iron Man book, so that's interesting as well. I don't want to spoil too much because Tim is still reading this.
Oh wait, I did read a little bit of that. I totally forgot about that.
Right. We do definitely get to see the character who's on the cover. She's there. She's there.
Does she have her line?
No, but you know, it does follow directly from some of the events of the some of the characters, some of the progression the characters made in the Amazing books, Amazing Spidey books. So you know, that's there.
Okay.
Let's see, what else did
Doctor Strange?
Yes, Doctor Strange. This is such a great, great book.
It is.
I'm telling you, Buffalo was born to draw this book.
Yeah, I mean, all the details that is drawn in this book is great. I mean, Jason Aaron's still doing it with the writing.
Mm-hmm.
This book is a lot of fun to read. We see Doc pretty much naked out in the world, but we find out this is astral form, right. And there's a lot of shenanigans going on on the astral plane, which he has to try to fix. And then he ends up finding out, to find out what's going on. Like, he doesn't necessarily know, but he's starting to get clued into what's going on near the end of the book.
Right. And what's cool about this is that you can definitely see Aaron telling the much bigger story, and he's weaved a lot into this, and especially he's weaved a lot of, I guess, so he's made a little bit of sense, as much as sense as you can make out of magic, into, you know, he's kind of weaved some of the rules of magic into the Marvel Universe. So, you know, I mean, it's nothing completely groundbreaking, but it's there, and it kind of helps, you know, ground what, you know, magicians in the Marvel Universe really can or cannot do.
Right, and actually gives the Doc a little bit more character than he's historically. You would think
definitely. Ahead. Listen, Jason Aaron is on a roll. He's really got, you know, he's really got a lot of great books going on right now. You know,
you can almost, I can almost just purchase and read all his books and be content.
Yeah,
pretty much. I think the only one I'm not reading is Thor, but
which you should be.
Yeah, I mean, I have it. I'm gonna check it out.
It's really good.
Spidey number one.
I want to read this. Dirt
haven't really read it yet. Book. Yeah.
Did you guys read that?
Oh, no. Not yet.
Okay. So Dirt's the only one that read it. His notes on it are better than Amazing Spider-Man, F-Slot, and perfect for kids and adults. This is Peter Parker. So that works for me. That's pretty cool.
So should say that this is from Robbie Thompson, who is making a name for himself in the Spider-Man universe with Venom, Space Knight, Silk, and now Spidey.
Cool.
So go Thompson. Go Thompson, and I guess we'll save his click of the week.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, and Sheriff of Babylon, which I also read.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
It was good. I like this.
Yeah, I did too.
This was
Tom King week.
Yeah.
Robin War number one, Vision, and what else am I forgetting?
Sheriff of Babylon.
Yeah. Yeah, I was about to say, I knew there was a third.
Yeah.
Murder Mystery in Baghdad, shortly after Saddam's army fell, told in layers, flashbacks, flash forwards, general mind fucks. Great.
Yeah,
I've seen a lot of buzz on this book, so I'm going to check that out.
It's really, it's good. I picked up a physical copy of this. Mitch Gerards is doing the art on this. We know him from The Punisher, you know, just before Secret Wars. They are down. Both of them are down to talk about this book on the show. So, you know, now, obviously, with the holidays being in effect, it's a little tough to get them on.
Mm.
You know, especially like when I saw when this was going to be dropped, it was tough to schedule them on because of Thanksgiving.
Well, hell, we can like January or February because
exactly.
True. Yeah, I want to get. I like both of them, but
exactly, we could definitely get both of them on because they're both interested in doing this. And Tim and I, you know, we can coordinate like the email going out to them. You know, because I definitely spoke to both of them in person about this, and this is I was more than pleasantly surprised at how much I like this book because I hadn't been really reading Grayson, so I wasn't as familiar with Tom King's writing as maybe some of you other guys are. But you know, the way this was laid out, the way the characters' storylines are intersecting, that was the most intriguing part. Figuring out how, you know, things kind of weave together, that was pretty cool.
He's the next up and coming star.
Yeah.
Huh, that's promising.
Definitely, definitely.
You're going to see a lot more stuff.
That one too.
So that does it for Dirt minus one.
Mm-hmm.
I'll knock mine out right quick. Where's mine? Oops. Let's see.
We haven't talked about Totally Awesome Hulk.
I was going to ask. Yeah.
Okay. We can talk about it.
Unless we were going to save that for somebody's pick of the week.
Yeah, I was going to save
it. Okay, we'll save it. Let's see if there's anything else here.
Robin War number one, which the review for Tom King, who I just rained praise down on, but I wasn't really feeling this issue too much. It was about average for me. It had a lot of artists on board, for one. Mm-hmm. And it's weird. It's like they sort of set it up as, you know, all these Robins are returning to Gotham City. But we already, well, at least myself and others that have read Grayson and some of the other DC books, all the Robins in
were already there, weren't they?
Well, they've already had their reunion in Grayson 12, I think.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Even with Batgirl.
Yeah, even with Batgirl, and then there's Batman and Robin Eternal going on right now, and the Robins getting together. So it's like all this stuff has already happened, but then Robin War sets it up like everyone get. The only difference was Robin War brought Damian into it because he's been off away from Gotham in his own solo book.
Right.
But even he was in that Grayson issue, so. Yeah, that was kind of odd. Court of Owls being involved is intriguing because they're like the newest cool Batman rogue group that's been created that looks like it's going to stick around for a while.
I was going to say, remember when we were all reading Talon?
Yeah, I was in Talon monthly.
We were all reading Talon.
James Tynion.
Oh my god, man. How long we've been doing this show. Look at that.
And
I think that's it.
Yeah, that's about it for Robin War. I think the tie-ins I'll enjoy the tie-ins a lot more than just this by itself. So
yeah, Roddy, I think Roddy's got a couple of books he wants to talk about.
Sure. Well, before I do that one, let's do Red Wolf number one, get that one out of the way. So
I skimmed this, so I can't talk about it. Go ahead.
Yeah, so this is directly from 1872. Matter of fact, they start off in 1872, where Red Wolf is the sheriff of Timely. He's dealing with people there, but then this other thing comes along, which apparently I'm thinking does tie into the Secret Wars, the 1872 Secret Wars, because there was a part at the end of that didn't make any kind of sense.
Yes.
Because
it's a direct follow-up.
Exactly. So I guess we're seeing from that, because like at first we was like, well, wait a minute, what's going on here? And then from this book, we see that somebody's going and killing folk using some kind of weird energy weapon.
And yeah, some stuff that doesn't belong in that era.
Exactly. So
which book are we talking about?
Red Wolf, number one.
Okay.
And so Red Wolf is dealing with that, trying to hunt him down. Alex from apparently Havoc was riding along with him.
Havoc.
But well, it's Alex, you know, when he was younger, because there's a reference.
Yeah,
because there's a reference when. Basically, Red Wolf is going off to try to hunt down to see what was going on because the town is thinking it's Indians and it's not, you know. So, but he needed somebody to ride with him. So the guys are like, "Well, I'm here. Take my boy with you. He needs to learn how to track and learn that engine stuff." So, which is, you know, this book borderline kind of tropey, but you know, I've seen articles about that. It is what it is, and you're gonna deal with it or not, I don't know. It's not bad, the bad brother, but it's just, you know, it is a language of the time, so you're gonna have to, you know.
Well, I was gonna say, I don't know if it's tropey so much as just,
well, that's what does it. Yeah.
Right, and the thing is, you have to understand that that's how they spoke.
Exactly, like I said, it was the language of the time.
Yeah, it's period correct.
Mm-hmm.
And as disturbing as it is to read, that's
right. That's what it was. So like I said, he was like, yeah, I'm telling my boy going on. And he called him by name, Alex. And there was a line right there that was like, go see, you know, basically going to see what's wreaking havoc in that same sense where he calls out his dad. So that's what I'm taking out of it. Whether it's him or not, I don't really know.
I understand.
But I just kind of took it from that.
I wasn't 100% sure that's what you were talking about, but now.
Right. I'm, yeah.
And obviously, if you read 1872, the Secret Wars, you know that basically the bulk of the Marvel Universe as we know it was based around that Timely little town, you know, that little town named Timely, so.
Right. So, because that was Eddie Brock in the beginning. But anyway, so that happens. They ride off. They go to find out what's going on. There's some storm coming up, but it's actually the person that's causing all the issue. Red Wolf has a couple of talks with his mom, you know, and then meets up with the person that's causing all the problem. They battle it out, and then he gets thrown into the future.
Spoiler alert, damn it, you should have told me to
read it. Yeah, well, sorry.
I mean, I was waiting for you to get to that point.
Right.
Because we don't know, we really don't know if that's where Red Wolf is going to end up.
I think we do.
What was the spoiler for? I wasn't paying attention.
Red Wolf?
I'm saying, but what was the spoiler for?
Oh, so at the end, when Red Wolf is fighting the guy, we don't know his name, that with the future tech, something happened and he gets thrown into what seems to be the future, or the present day.
Oh.
Right, that's the twist. Yeah. And I'm not 100% sure if he's going to remain in the present day or not. I wasn't sure.
Right.
That's really what I was referring to, Roddy, when I asked.
I got you.
I'm not sure if this is going to remain the status quo, if he's going to go get shunted right back into the Timely timeline.
Yeah, see, I was kind of wondering about. I feel like they're probably not, and they're just going to keep him here, and then we may see the Rangers show up or something. I don't know. That's just me thinking all kind of crazy, but
gotcha.
I kind of wonder about that myself. So it was a decent read, but it was also a beginning issue. We don't know where it's going to go and how long it's going to last, but it was intriguing enough to kind of see what's going to happen in the next issue.
Right.
Then there's Howard the Duck number 2. I kind of actually enjoyed this book because there was two stories in this. I'm not going to really talk about the Gwenpool one and the back end of it. It was what it was. So the main story was basically an origin of two characters that came in the last issue, Linda and Shocket, who were basically female clones of Rocket Raccoon and Howard the Duck from when they were imprisoned by the Collector in the previous series. And I think that was probably like the first one or two issues. I can't remember. So basically, like this is their issue. And it's actually kind of heartwarming in parts because, like, Howard Duck doesn't show up at all. You basically just see their whole journey from how they get to, you know, how they grew up and where they come from, the person I was taking care of, and them running from the Collector, because it basically starts at a certain point, then they time jump back, and then they're still on the run, and there's allusions to them still time jumping, I'm not sure, but they're still on the run from the Collector, because they're thinking he's going to keep getting closer to find them again, and then at the end of the book, they end up pretty much saying, hey, we're going to go find the Nexus of All Realities, which is, as we know, is in the swamps of Florida, and where I guess the last issue ends, but they don't necessarily go there. Like I said, it was a pretty good read. There was no Howard the Duck, and it wasn't really all that jokey. Like, Sadowski's work is pretty much, like, joke-laden, and there's a lot of humor in it, and this one was actually not so much of that.
Okay.
It's worth a check out, let's put it away. Even if you don't know anything about what's going on in that book, you know. I think that's about it, except for, well, Vision 2, I want to, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, I guess we're going to move into, like, Click of the Week territory now.
Yeah, because I'm still kind of debating, but, so, I'm finished on that one.
All right, so I guess we're going to move into Click of the Week territory. I'm still undecided. I know that Dirt has decided, and I think Tim has decided also, so I guess how about we deal with you guys first?
My Click of the Week is Totally Awesome Hulk, number 1.
That's pretty awesome.
Awesome and fun.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
It was a very fun issue. Just the way Amadeus Cho is behaving, the art from Frank Cho. I mentioned that Miles Morales showed up in another book and was hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And this was it. A lot of it wasn't even how he was written by Greg Pak. It was just like him poking his head out from corners of panels. And Hulk, Chow arguing with She-Hulk. about being a 40-year woman.
Yeah, there's a lot of great little bits in this. Roddy, you haven't read this yet?
No, I have not. I just went through it a little while ago, but
read it. It's really good. You know what's funny? Go ahead, Sam.
I was going to say, talk about number one issue just hitting the ground running. This was it.
You know, I definitely agree with that. What's funny?
The first couple of pages, it seemed like the art was definitely well done, but what are you expecting from, you know?
What's funny about Frank Cho is that, you know, we know him as like the dude that draws like bodacious babes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, and I give him a ton of credit on this. His Hulk does look vaguely Asian, you know? There's certain facial characteristics. You know, you can see how he is facially different from the Bruce Banner Hulk that we've seen in the past. He even has a chance to draw the Bruce Banner, spoiler alert, in here.
Yeah, he does make an appearance.
You know, we definitely do see the Bruce Banner Hulk in this, and we see the distinct differences between the facial structures of the two Hulks. And I love that, you know, we can definitely tell that, you know, he is of an Asian descent. You know, it's pretty cool. It's pretty awesome that, you know, there's not much, there's some really great bits in here. We do establish what may have happened to Bruce Banner and the Hulk that we know, the Incredible Hulk. We also get to see what may be lurking in the future for this version of the Totally Awesome Hulk. You know, in terms of his psyche and what may be lying underneath.
We see his sister.
Yes, yeah. I don't know if the sister's ever been really introduced.
I think Packer said she's been referenced before, but never made an appearance.
Right. So she is the sidekick who is basically, if you recall, they're adapting the. Remember when the Hulk was an agent of the agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., agent of the time S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, the time travel S.H.I.E.L.D. people in all new Marvel. Do you guys remember that when he was wearing the armor, the Hulk, and he had like a little robot flying around?
Yeah, it didn't make sense.
Right. So now they kind of adapted that and made and gave Amadeus Cho a flying robot companion that's voiced by the sister. And Roddy will appreciate this. Roddy, when you read this, I'm not spoiling anything. When you read this, and you look at some of the ways that Cho draws the flying robot, tell me it doesn't look like Rom Space.
I was thinking that because I was skimming through it, and I was like, why does this look like Rom Space Knight? Oh, I was already there. You are absolutely right.
I was laughing the whole time. Like, are you serious right now? He's referencing Rom Space Knight. So nice.
Somebody has to.
I got a kick out of that. I got a real kick out of that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That's cool. And that is Tim's click of the week this week. And I'm very close to seconding that. I'm not 100% yet.
Speaking of click of the week, I don't know where that section went, and that's bothering me. But anyway,
well, we can do dirt. While you're still considering. Alright. So, Tim, you want to read this or you want me to read it?
If you've got it up, you can go.
Alright. So, according to Dirt, he's torn between Sheriff of Babylon and Vision Number 2, both by Tom King.
Mm.
And while the Sheriff of Babylon may make some review lists, Dirt has Vision Number 2 on his mind because of what it brings to the superhero comic book genre. It might be because of the Data clones, Star Trek shot out there, actually having emotions or being programmed to have emotions. He's not 100% sure if the narrator is in the character's head, parentheses, a flawed narrator, or is actually retelling the story from a point of view in the future, like a true crime show on Investigation Discovery Channel.
Yeah.
In any event, he's absolutely hooked and can't get the series out of my head. I agree wholeheartedly. Vision Number 2 was so very good. There's a couple of really great twists thrown in here. Specifically, there's a scene with the principal of the school that where the Vision's children attend, you know, go to school. I believe it's a high school, and there is a bit of narration that kind of leads us to think that, you know, that there's a lot worse coming down the road. We'll put it that way.
Right. Vision kind of pulls rank in that scene.
Yes.
In a sense. So I was like, huh. Yeah. I would agree with the whole thing because this vision so far has been great storytelling. Yeah.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable that this flew so low under the radar for a lot of us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's absolutely become a must read in two issues.
Yeah. And it's a far cry from the old Vision of Scarlet Witch miniseries that used to come out. Like, it is completely different. Which, And immediately, I was kind of thinking, I was like, okay, what were they going to do? But at the same time, I recognize this is that same time period that that those books were kind of existing in, and not right. in the same kind of universe as those was existing. So what was this book going to be? And it thoroughly impressed me.
Yeah.
So hopefully it'll keep doing that. And I don't have any doubt that it would.
Definitely, definitely. All right. So that's two clicks that we got out of the way. Roddy, you and I are up. And mm-hmm. I'm torn between the two that have already come.
Yeah.
The two that have already been made, those are two of the strongest books that I read this week.
And I agree.
I'm definitely on board with both of them as candidates for click of the week this week. I'll throw out a click of the week for last week. That was easy for me. It's Groot, number 6. Read it. You'll enjoy it. This week, man, I am so stuck. Because I love Star Wars number 13 also.
Mm-hmm.
I agree that the ending did lose a little bit of impact, but at the same time, I just thought that there was a lot of stuff that Aaron sprinkled in there between the different groups of characters interacting and just the way Diodato told the story was so good.
I'm going to go ahead and put out last, because I'm going to go ahead and say probably New Avengers for last. No, I'm sorry. That was not last week. My bad.
2 weeks ago.
I should do it anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, it would probably have to be like Vader 13, because it was actually a pretty action-packed book for what it mm-hmm. was. I mean, that's probably the one that's actually kind of standing out outside of Surfer.
Right.
And the reason why Surfer stands out was only because of that one part that we won't know anything about for a couple of months.
Right. You know what? So, are you about to make a click?
Yeah, I think Guardians of Infinity was actually pretty good, but it was only pretty good for that side, for that backstory. Like the beginning story is good, and this guy's maybe there's something's gonna come out of that, and that backstory was really great, but I can't really give it to it for that. So I'm gonna go with Vision number 2.
Nice.
I mean, Doctor Strange, Star Wars, both of those were pretty good, and all that.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff out of this week,
but
you know,
Vision was just solid.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna back up Tim on this one because I had so much fun reading Totally Awesome Hulk number 1.
Mm.
You know, just so much fun reading it. You know, Sheriff of Babylon, great book. Vision number 2, I read, this afternoon. It was, you know, I'm hooked on it as well. You know, I love the fact that there's a twist at the end of Vision number 2.
Yeah.
You know, that twist almost got me to pick it. That's why I was kind of hemming and hawing.
Yeah, and that's why I was like, the Vision's just playing out like a movie or, like you said, a true crime mm-hmm.
Yeah, show. Thanks to
and it's, like, yeah. It's because of that, that's the most compelling thing about this book, you know.
Definitely. So
before I forget, Kingsway West is also Greg Pak. Do we have any more? I know this is like way outside the whatever. Do we know anything about that? Because that's the coolest one I saw where it's like next year. I thought it was supposed to come out this month.
Is that his Dark Horse book?
I believe so. I thought it was supposed to come out this month. Yes.
Okay, I'm not 100% sure. You have to take a look at maybe the solicits to see.
Well, I saw something that said like June of next year, but I didn't know if that was actually true, and this was on Dark Horse's site, so I guess that was the case, but I wasn't wanted to know if you guys knew anything about it. I'm kind of curious about that one.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, you were saying?
Oh, no, I was just, you know, like, just trying to wrap up, you know.
That's everyone's clicks, right?
Yeah, we've got our clicks in.
Yep.
Sweet. All right. Thank you all for tuning in to tonight's episode.
Yay!
We'll be back next week with another assigned episode. Make sure to follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDOGG98 and at CBCron. Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at NewsNerdsNeed.
Yo!
And Agent 70 is at Agent_70.
Yeah!
And with that, we are the Comfort Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Hey! Let's go!